Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
3D Obsession, a 3D printing company. I've got this card here, and it says 3D printing for cosplayers by cosplayers. Now, a cosplayer is someone who legitimately dresses up in a Batman or Superman or Freddy Krueger or Star Wars uniform and actually engages with the rich fantasy culture that we have developed mostly through American Empire type of things, Warner Brothers and the DC comics. And their web address is 3dobsession.com.au, and it says 3D printing of props, helmets, costume pieces, figurines, models, finished and unfinished options. And they've got you can email to Chris, who is the man I spoke with 3dobsessions.com.au, and his man I was speaking with was Chris Bannerman. So I'm going to put you in a little bit of story about this revelation of cosplay and podcasting and the HubCon conference, comic convention that was at, that is not of comics, of comics as in people who stand up, but comics as in the action books, the sort of this popular culture. It's pop culture, it's popular culture that has come about. So I'm going to put you in a little bit of background. I'm doing podcasting in order to speak, recall things, recall and structure things. So if I'm concentrating, thinking that I'm listening and going to make a podcast, I actually assemble the information a bit more clearly. And so that's the basis of it. And I'm over the time producing podcasts. And there's a very small audience of about 100 people worldwide who listen into these efforts as they, I suppose, gradually improve. And I suppose in the next little while, I'm just going to increase the sound quality, so I don't have to worry so much about compression. At the moment, I've got a few, I've sort of reducing my overall load of uploading to the internet, so I upload a lot of Internet of things, and I've actually shrunk that down. This is just back data of experiments up to the internet, and so I can actually afford to upload a slightly higher quality podcasts, and that might give you an idea that I'm a I suppose what would be called a voice memoer. I actually just record straight onto it and upload it. Now that's technically called a voice memo, not necessarily a podcast, and it'll give you an idea that I'm looking at the general rehab and combining the challenges of technological development as part of my rehab to develop. Now that's given a background as to why you're listening to this podcast, but to try and put you into the place, it was on the 14th of July in Springwood in the Blue Mountains, which is in Australia, at the back of the mountain range, at the back of Australia, the back of Sydney. So it's really a deeply eroded plateau. It's a plateau with deep canyons and inside, and in fact it is the second largest canyon system in the world. And there are some things which I would, some views of it you'd have to say would have to rival the United States. Like the United States, it's got a big canyon system, and you can see a greater distance across it, but you can see our smaller canyon system from a greater vantage point. And there's sort of greenery and, you know, Australian bush and people living in and through it. So it's the Blue Mountains, and there's a beautiful community convention centre about 30 kilometres into the mountains called the Springwood Convention Centre. And this is the ideal place for the community to get together. And it's a lot of these things, they're on the satellite of Sydney, and so they draw people from the south coast, north coast, central Sydney in, and this one is a north coast company. It doesn't actually say where they're located, but about 80 kilometres north of the Harbour Bridge, or probably 100 kilometres north of the Harbour Bridge in Sydney, is where this place is located. And I spoke with Chris and said, look, I'd like to come back at, say, 3:30 when you're packing up, and see if I can actually nab a podcast with you. I'm practicing, I'd like to actually get around. And we talked about it, and it was actually quite good because we got the general idea about what you would say. But of course, things changed, and indeed they had to get out precisely at 3:30, because what happens is there's a concertina sort of like expanding floor. It's hard to describe. It's a floor which goes at an angle, and it's sort of like steps. So their display area converted into a theatre, and they're later on going to do a Back to the Future program. We saw it, and someone had actually driven a real DeLorean car up, and it's, you know, very interesting to see people's interaction with the comic idea and the actual reality. So the DeLorean actually turned out to have a very heavy handling, no power steering, and basically a very heavy car made out of stainless steel surface. So it's sort of like an armoured plated thing. And it's sort of very hard to get in, but beautiful gullwings at the front. But that type of thing meant that they had to evacuate from there. And so there was probably, I'd say, around 30 exhibitors. And this was, people said, oh, look, you've got to see this. And I'll just say my overall expression in that I was rather surprised to see different aspects of the comic world as it was described. When I say comics, the various Pokemon, Star Wars, all these things which have got fandom associated with it. This is people's sort of obsession with, I suppose, a card game called Magic might be there. There's World of Warcraft, various fantasy, alternative people who are painting artists. And this particular thing was actually jumped into the cosplay area. So cosplayers are people who actually quite unashamedly dress up, and part of their expression of it is their interaction is actually dressed as a particular thing. And so that sort of thing, it's a great benefit to people around the place. It just gives that atmosphere of, if you could possibly call it, authenticity. And there in this display booth was a Star Wars helmet, a Pokemon, a Pokeball, chain mail. This is actually plastic chain mail, but it's something made, I think that small little square I saw took 36 hours to print. However, they obviously didn't have to sit there to print. And then they had things like big recognisable, I suppose, Thor's hammer and various things, almost straight out of the. So if you can imagine the pictures on these boxes and cartoons taken up into the three-dimensional stuff that you could actually pick up. So you've got this basic prop. There's also an Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator hand, beautifully rendered. And I suppose once it's produced there and silvered, what obviously they have a rich resin to produce it, and it's something which can be quickly produced. Now, just to give, I suppose people are interested, there's, from what I was speaking with Chris, he's got five conventional three-dimensional plotters, if that makes sense. It plots in three three directions with the resin being pumped through. And I wish I could remember the name of his assistant, but I actually almost didn't try because I just knew the name would go out rather quickly. But I said, "Oh, look, I'm really enthusiastic about it. Have you heard of?" And basically, this is a photocopier with a resin bath on it, and UV light underneath, and oxygen being pumped into the chamber between the UV source and the glass. Oxygen's been pumped in there, oxygen then diffuses through the glass, and oxygen frustrates the curing of the resin. And and I said, "Oh, had you heard that?" And they said, "Yes, look, we've got this little ring here, and apparently you can buy these things," which were sort of cutting edge technology, now off eBay, and they have small resin pots, but you can actually just project two-dimensional cross sections and actually just lift almost out of the lake, out of the water, these beautiful 3D shapes. I was very enthusiastic about it. There's obviously some problems, but there's also some obviously there's not as much mechanical wear. It's almost a solid state 3D printer come out, and so rather than mechanical plotting points all moving about, that's very attractive. But then, of course, if you have a 3D printer, you can print a certain amount, then move it to another printer, or change the head, or automatically change the head, so you can actually get interwoven composites. You can't get that necessarily with this thing, but it's a beautiful concept. It's not necessarily that there is a knowledge of how that goes together. Now, I should say that a bit later on, I'll probably try and describe it. The Sons of Obi-Wan, a Jedi school, have their fantastic state-of-the-art lightsabers. The hand hilts are 3D printed by this particular company, so all these little fragmentary companies are coming together, sort of sucking in experience and going forward. And for me, it was a big epiphany. I chatted with Chris, and it came from. So I'll just give you a rundown of the human race, or pre-human race. So 2 million years ago, the Homo erectus, Homo heidelbergus, they came up with the idea of systematically using tools. So this is a bit different from getting a stick and poking it into a beehive to get some food out, which is technically tool use, which is a sort of ad hoc tool use. This is building tools with the intent to later use them. And for about 2 million years, up until fairly recently, there was this really fascinating stuff that people for 2 million years worked out that they could make a tool, but never worked out that they could do anything differently. So the tools are very similar, and what would happen is that they'd get a rock, break it in two, to the smaller bit, and they'd keep on discarding the waste rock. So if you imagine that they keep on paring down the rock, you'd get half a rock, and then a quarter of a rock, a third of a rock, and then finally a tool coming out. And so there was a big revolution when people began to build many tools out of the same rock, and change the amount of flaking that they go across. Now, the first really sharp tools are from flint. Flint, obviously, everyone knows the Flintstones, the flint tools. But flint is indeed volcanic glass, which has been flung out of the volcano. So these big globs of volcanic glass, obsidian and flint, they get thrown out as little boulders, and you have flint plains. And so depending on how you migrate, you'll get these flint plains. And the great thing about glass is it is a glass. There's no crystalline shear planes. And so you can actually, from building one edge, you're not determined what the other edge. With the crystal, once you put one edge in, it's obviously the crystal, and it's very brittle. So glass can remain sharp. And I had a student once, a Korean student, who loved to nap glasses, nap bottles, to nap tools. I definitely appreciated it. And his enthusiasm was, I think, rather missed, rather lost by people looking at it. But by and by, the so this is tools for hunter-gatherers, and that you got compound tools. And, of course, obviously I'm seeing these tools generated from comic strips, sort of just being pulled out of imagination directly with no social structure. And this is what I want to talk about, is that gradually we had iron and mass manufacturing, and that's where we would make the negative image of the tool, six of them, or six or more, or 20 as much, and then pour in the brass or the bronze, and they would mass manufacture, much as we mass manufacture today, except we tend to use injection molding that have sort of multiple molds to get through. And this is where you've got the economy starting to go. You've got, say, in Britain, Cornwall, the tin mines, the various King Solomon's tin mines, tin being very important to add to your copper. So you've got world trade driving tool manufacturing, and then eventually, as you follow it through, you get the Industrial Revolution and the idea of the Whitworth, that the actual tools no longer have bespoke threads. There is a universal thread, so this allows us to build these large cities and large tools where someone produces screws, and the screws can be used in a number of devices. And of course, this is with 3D printing, you gain, obviously, don't need to have to do this. So, like the I suppose there's a thing that if you've got a manufactured standardized, so imagine that all the screws and threads of the old rifles were not compatible. So if something broke, it broke. But if you, say, had three broken rifles, you couldn't do as we do nowadays, is make a working rifle out of the three broken ones. So it gives you that edge, that field reconstruction. Of course, 3D printing really changes that. You no longer have to have a detailed system where you identify things. You can actually scan and produce what you want. So this is a bit of a revelation, and for me, I was interested in how Chris was a geological engineer, or geological something along those ones, a geologist working in mines, essentially. And when that career closed, this new career evolved, and you can actually see this happen a series of times, that the people working in this space sort of have the ability to transform it and move and actually interact with other people who are similarly moving in this space. So if you can imagine the Industrial Revolution creating an idea of people working in a factory for life, because they are basically the equivalent of a chip in a machine. The person is a machine. And so as the tool technology winds down, we come post-industrial, you get the post-industrial tool, which is this 3D printer. Now, the interesting fact is that it's cost-driven, and there is this technology set. There are resin chemists sitting around Sydney just twiddling their thumbs. They know exactly what to do, and so they're producing little batches of resin, colouring, and giving all the technical advice. So you can see this post-industrial technology going forward with post-industrial people and post-industrial support systems and post-industrial marketing. where you've got 3D marketing, 3D printing, and you have the cosplay. Of course, the people who are in the cosplay market are sort of like a horizontal thing, which, or a vertical thing, I suppose, which then goes that the people there doing cosplay will know someone who needs it to use a 3D printer. So it's this beautiful, a beautiful way to go forward, and of course, the people's flexibility in mind, and it's ideal for 3D printing because you can 3D print a car part, but it obviously doesn't have the engineering like you 3D print a ball bearing, but it wouldn't actually be able to take any forces or anything like that. So it's ideally structuring that on many, many levels, and it's sort of part of the natural. So rather than looking just at purely the technical evolution, I'm looking at the sort of social, cultural movements that we, I mean, in my youth there was no such thing as a comic convention and or 3D printers, and the idea was, well, let's pick the general trend of technology, and we are going to have these fantastic factories which I go to, and it will continue to employ me for life. And this is why seeing the chain mail and seeing the ancient tools, which are faithfully reproduced, you suddenly go, oh, chain mail used to be take a village of people to work forever to actually make hours and hours of work to make the chain mail to go around a single warrior, a single knight would take a huge amount of effort to make that chain mail. But this is produced, so there are many things in which you'd go. Now for me personally, one of the things about the massive information age is that I no longer want to keep anything, let alone physical artifacts. However, so that's rather interesting that people don't have a desire. Well, I don't have a desire for any knickknacks or anything like that. I suppose some people do. However, the idea of possessing a knickknack and putting it on your shelf is gone, and now you have the cosplay, something that you do have a Warhammer, which would make sense carrying if you're also dressed up, sort of like ticking sufficient boxes you get through, and then people can relate to you, the Warhammer, the entire system, and actually interact with you. I'm dreadfully aware that I spoke to the lady driver of the DeLorean, and I was really obsessed with the DeLorean, getting facts about it, but I sort of really forgot. I hate to say it, forgot about her to sort of talk about how she felt in this way. And in a sense, there was this relationship that people are having with the cosplay and the more sophisticated thing, the stories behind it. The amount of work generated from it, and the idea that this is in someone's house in a shed, that you suddenly don't have the huge overheads of renting and various things like that. I suppose there's various things I suppose that I was very curious or very able to do is address UV curing, address as a laser physicist UV curing, very interested in doing that. The idea of being able to how to remove the wet resin. So the resin coming out, it's been pulled, it's solid resin, but it comes out very solid, and it's also got the resin attached to it, so you have to blow it down and re-cure it. And so you've got all these ideas, And I suppose my industrial understanding is that, you know, if you've got a 32-hour sequence to actually pull, say, a skull out of a pool of resin, you know, what can you do that, you know, it's something which really speaks to you in terms of project management and timing to get it out. And now there's mentions to me some bespoke things that I definitely want to get, and I'll send this off. This is also sending off to Chris, is some 3D things which would be really worthwhile. And that's for me is the Braille periodic table with these plastic blocks with space Lego on it. So it's got sort of Lego interlocks, but there's space such that the hydrogen can only link into a helium and a lithium. It links in that way, and you have the raised letter, a raised ball to be the atomic radius. Within that ball, a circle to represent the electron affinity. So electron affinity is more a quantum mechanical concept, which has sort of been brushed aside. And so this is how much an atom can absorb another electron through it. An electron and can sit through the space of an atom and give up energy. So the lowest energy atom of chlorine is chlorine minus. Chlorine is the most stable with an additional electron in it. This is true, and that additional electron is sitting through it. So I'd like to do that, and obviously have the Braille dots to go up. Now, one of the great things is that there's the tooling for it, and how one gets the finance for it. Now, there's this sort of very closed science education community where there are people who are not necessarily that expert at the trade who are sort of standing in the place. And one of the things that you can't do is interact. If you don't know what you're doing, you're standing between experts and the general public. There's certain things that people just don't know how to handle. And so these are the comments about what to do with science education and periodic tables and stuff like that. You suggest it to them, and they say, "Oh, that's very nice," and it's like it's so easy for them to be put it into the crazy basket. And so that, I think that's what's happened now. So what I'd like to do, Chris, is to make one or two elements which stick together, not the entire 118 elements. Design it together, make it very nice, and you and I, or myself, I'll go up to the science minister and saying, "Oh, this is a, you know, you're elected to represent the whole of society, and some of your society is vision impaired, and so the man in the street can ignore them and say, oh, they're unimportant, but as something, and you're also here to listen to all people, the experts and the non-experts. You're obviously going to weight things differently, but pick up the information. That's your job here. And we'd like some funding to do it. I suppose we could also kickstart there. I suppose confidence to do it. But these are Braille blocks to go across. Now, there is another thing, is there's these things which 3D printing really works wonderful for. Things like this, which have got detailed engineering requirements, which would be burdensome to do, but also in the things that I'm manufacturing these knowledge cubes, which are basically power banks with Arduinos and Wi-Fi and then as a cube, so it's transportable and accessible and doesn't interfere with the space. It's a contained cube, so it's inside the cube. You don't have to worry about. And I'm doing things like Einstein's and the Thompson's effect and Internet of Things, things all based on this. But as it's coming up, to solve various problems, I do need bespoke parts. So one of the things is to actually get the prototypes up in front of people with the 3D printing. That'd be definitely a way to go across. So there's the aspects of 3D printing, and the technology is happening very, very quickly, and a lot of these things is your expense you pay for the sort of size of thing that you can manufacture, and your volume and rate. It's a classical, highly complex system where it doesn't cost a lot to deploy for something, but it does cost a lot of thinking time and a lot of critical investment. So there's not a lot of capital there, so it's not a lot, but you don't have a lot to deploy. And so it is sort of ideally landing in the lap of cosplay, because cosplay, it's just the ability to get across and the ability to intersect with the market. So it's a brilliant market going forward. And that's pretty well all I wanted to say. I did want to actually, I do apologise for Chris for not getting back for a podcast. But, you know, my kids were away, there are other things looking at, and then they were definitely out by 5 o'clock, which I thought they were there for. They were gone because they had to go through the safety procedure to have this expanding, this hall, which converts into a theatre. It's pretty amazing stuff. Perhaps not Australian design, it's probably a Chinese design manufactured in India, just dropped into Australia, sort of picked off the internet, or it could be an Australian first, who knows. But the I definitely do feel that general goodwill and community staff level-headedness is allowing this to establish, whereas China's producing these huge factories which manufacture things, copies of things. This allows a more dispersed. So Australia's got the population of, say, Los Angeles, or less than New York, but we're covered over most of continental United States, minus California. So if you halved off California and said that's the rest, that's the size of Australia. So Australia's actually smaller than Brazil, remarkably. Nonetheless, it's a very remote and distant distant place, which means that people can trust each other. You know, people, there's just not the market there to set up in competition with people. People trust each other, and there's a need to do big things. So there's sort of a lot of ex-military armourers and stuff like that walking about the place. And as the system changes, I don't know how these people sort of hang in the system a bit longer, and the art is actually getting in contact with them. So I was very impressed with the 3D printing, and for me it was this sort of like reverse feeling of an archaeological site. It's sort of like a future archaeological site. So for me, I don't know, picking up an arrowhead in Flint, Michigan, and there was that just enormous feeling, or in the Orkneys, I went walking off you know, off the track and found a can of an area, or I was walking, I walked from Salisbury to Stonehenge, and walking in there, to see Stonehenge, I was standing on these little hills, and I could see that there was these other hills. There's this intense feeling when you, or you go into a museum and see an ancient skeleton, something like that. That intense feeling when you're actually up there with artifacts, which connects you to a past time. I felt really like this connected me to a future time. So good on you, and good luck to your venture. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.